Welcome to Ancient Future Faith with Dr. Chris Alford, pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community in Sacramento. Just what is ancient future Christian faith? Join Chris each week as he talks with special guests about a refreshing renewal in evangelical worship and spirituality that's helping many believers get in touch with their ancient Christian heritage. Now, with another look at how the road to the evangelical future runs through the ancient past, here's Dr. Chris Alford.
Well, hi, folks, and welcome back to another exciting edition of Ancient Future Faith. My name is Chris Alford. I'm the pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith Christian church in Sacramento, California. As always, we love to send people over to our website to learn a little more about Epiclesis, what it is we believe. You can even find out what in the world an Epiclesis is. On this program, we love to invite folks to listen in as I talk to a wide variety of people who are involved in ministry and faith and theology and pastors and so on. And today, back for a second time in the Ancient Future Faith Studios, is one of our very own, and her name is Aubrey Ashian. Aubrey, hi, welcome back.
Hi, Pastor Chris. Thanks for having me on today.
Oh, you bet.
Pleasure to be back.
Yeah, it's wonderful. You are the daughter of our associate pastor, Dr. Rick Ashy, and and lots of other things, too, apart from that. But I was just thinking before we started recording, your last year has been a whirlwind, yeah?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about all the many places. Just give us a bird's eye view, an overview of all the 827 things you've done over the last, it's more than 9 months, right? Because this time last year you were off to school and then, man, you hit the ground running.
Last year about this time I was heading back to campus, starting my junior year at Point Loma Nazarene University, coming off of a summer where I had kind of a faint idea of wanting to study abroad. And so working really hard while taking lots of units at school, working with the Campus Activities Board, working with Alpha, a ministry for freshmen, doing all of those things, but also trying to figure out, would I study abroad? Can I study abroad? Is it even possible this late in the game? But I decided to study abroad in Quito, Ecuador, and that's where I was this year during the spring semester. And then during all of that time, have been thinking, wanting to do something really purposeful with my summer, something that would challenge me to learn and to grow. And therefore, during my time in the Quito semester, I was able to find a ministry of one collective in Santiago de Compostela, Spain. And I pursued that opportunity and was able to intern there. And I'm just right back, have only been back for about a week in the United States. So,
and then you're off again next week to go back to school.
Yeah. Yep. Less than a week to go back to school.
So. Well, let's go back and unpack a little bit of that. So you're a rising senior at Point Loma, and folks might not know where that is. So a little description there.
Point Loma Nazarene is a private Christian college located in San Diego, California.
And your daddy and mom went there, right?
Yes. It's kind of a family school for me. I went there so that I would be able to find unique Christian community of like-minded believers. But also, I was familiar about it because my aunt works there and three sets of my aunts and uncles have gone there, as well as my parents.
I didn't know you had somebody working there. So that's kind of neat to have a family member to touch base with if you're feeling lonely or sad or disoriented or whatever. That's good. And so I cannot, off the top of my noggin, remember your major.
My major currently is management with a concentration in entrepreneurship and a minor in nonprofit organization.
That's right. I was thinking there was a nonprofit angle to that.
However, Pastor Chris, there is a twist. I'm actually throughout the, because of the last formational 6 months of my life, I have been thinking and contemplating and working the steps of potentially being able to change my major to international development.
And will that mean more time, or can you get it all done and wrapped up?
I'll be able to get it all done, I believe. Still working out some of the details. Might have to work a little bit harder, take more units, but I think that it would be worth it in the end. So.
Wow, that's a huge task ahead of you to get all the requisites in and still finish on time. Wow. Well, best of luck with that. I had a similar sort of experience. I think I told you last time that I also spent an entire year abroad. I did it my senior year. And my final quarter at school, I had to take 24 hours of credit to get it all done. And I still have bad PTS dreams about that.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Yeah, so I hope you don't have any experience like that. Well, let's then talk about briefly that first stop. You went down to Ecuador, and what was the purpose of that? It was just an opportunity to study abroad, right? And so your university had a relationship with that particular program. Tell me just a little bit about that.
Yeah, I studied abroad with Living and Learning International, and I decided to go with Living and Learning first because I would be able to learn Spanish, I would be able to take two Spanish classes, but also because they kind of have a holistic development of students in mind. And so we have chapel, and on top of that, I would be able to complete a business internship while I was there and take all of the necessary classes. And they also had a lot of built-in excursions and just really intentional and community-minded individuals.
Wow, I didn't realize that there was a business opportunity component to that. I'm sure hoping you kept really good records and you're writing all this stuff down, because someday, among other things, I'm trying to help you with your career here. What a resume you're going to have. So make sure you're writing all this stuff down, yes?
Absolutely.
All the stuff that you did.
Yes, sir.
And so you were there how long?
I was there for about 4 months.
Oh, that's right. It was a pretty good chunk.
Yeah. Kind of crazy. I'll spend just about 6 months out of the U.S. and 6 months in the U.S. this year.
That's right. So toward the end of your time in Ecuador, I think the original plan was maybe to return home, but another opportunity comes along, and I think you also half broke your foot or something. Tell us about that little transition and how the opportunity to go to Spain popped up there at the end.
While I was studying abroad in Ecuador, the organization that I studied abroad with is called One Collective, and okay. They have 65 different locations around the globe.
Oh, wow.
And so not only did I study abroad with One Collective, but I also did my internship in Ecuador with One Collective.
Okay.
And I really align with their mission, vision, and values. And so kind of coming up late, it was April, beginning of May, and I shot an email out expressing my interest in the community engagement internship in Santiago de Compostela and kind of preparing to return home and not really thinking that I would be able to find something for the summer where I would be able to continue to practice my Spanish mm-hmm. and be able to travel, but also be able to serve and live that, live purposefully.
And they came back and said, yeah.
Yeah. And so throughout that whole application process, started fundraising, and in the Galapagos, I ended up rolling my ankle. So that set my time going to Spain back a little bit, which was actually such a blessing because I was able to finish fundraising and do that well and spend time with family and then be able to go more fully prepared, fully equipped, and then also sent by Places Church community as well.
That should be a country tune. I rolled my ankle in the Galapagos.
Yeah.
That rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? I'm curious about how you identified Spain and that particular mission. Were you looking through a list of potential places, or did that specific thing pop up?
Even though I didn't know that I was going to go to Spain for a long time, the thought and the thinking behind it, I was wanting to go somewhere similar to that. So even though it was kind of a last minute opportunity, it was not last minute in my thought process, my thinking, my searching for something similar to that.
Well, it just seems like a God thing, too. Absolutely. I mean, it seems providential, yeah?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you come back home with a not all the way broken foot. You cracked it or sprained it or something, yeah?
Yeah, it was a second degree sprain.
Okay. You come home for a very short window of time. You're getting better with the foot, and we at the church, among other supporters, are helping you get ready to go to Spain, and zap, you're off. Here's where I'd like to spend the bulk of our conversation, but first let me remind folks that they're listening to a program called Ancient Future Faith. My name is Chris Alford. I'm the host, the pastor of Epiclesis, and with me today in the studio is Aubrey Ashe. Aubrey is a senior at Point Loma in California. She's the daughter of our associate pastor, Dr. Rick Ashe, daughter of Deanne Ashe, and proud sister of Jesselyn, and she's with us today to talk about this whirlwind year she's had, and now we want to specifically focus on what in the world you've been doing in Spain for the last few weeks. First of all, remind us of the organization that sponsored you. You were there under their auspices. And then let's talk a little bit about the day-to-day opportunities that you had.
I was a community engagement intern with One Collective.
Okay, let's break that down. Community engagement intern. What in the world does that mean?
I was able to engage both the pilgrims who were passing in and out through Santiago, finishing up their pilgrimage and their journey as they came to an end and head back to their homes, as well as my work with Apotheca, where I was able to work alongside them in One Collective's holistic community development.
Gotcha. And so we better just say for folks who might not realize what the Camino is. The Camino is a pilgrimage route. Actually, it's several different routes that people can take, and it's been going on for centuries, really. It's gotten popular again in the late 20th, early 21st century, but it's been going on for hundreds of years, and it's a long walk, right? And people walk across even up to 500 miles, and they end their journey in this particular place where you were located. And the idea behind your mission was to encounter, hang out with, help pilgrims who have just finished this potentially life-changing walk. And it's much more than a walk. What process, think about, break down, understand, come to grips with what they've just experienced. Am I getting it right, mostly?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep, you got it.
So how many people are walking the Camino? How many folks are coming through your door? And at some point, probably a little bit later in the conversation, I want you to tell us about some conversations that you had. Were you overwhelmed with folks coming through?
It depended on the day, really. We like to say that Pilgrim House is Santiago's best kept secret because kind of nestled away, not a lot of opportunity for advertising, but as pilgrims passed by or heard about the ministry through word of mouth, they were able to come in. And usually we had between 30 to 40 pilgrims coming in every day.
Wow.
Able to use the facilities. We had a quiet room.
What are the facilities?
We had a quiet room in the back where pilgrims were able to reflect silently. A patio. They were able to use our kitchenette. We provided a number of services.
Like, are there showers and bathrooms and stuff like that?
There are bathrooms. There's no showers because it's kind of like an albergue. An albergue, for those who don't know, is essentially a hostel in Spain.
Gotcha.
And so it's a hostel without the beds. It's a place where pilgrims can come and gather. We had groups that would come in, big families. All right, everybody, meet back here in 1 hour. And it's pretty central in the old historic district.
Is it actually on the Camino route, or I don't know what happens to the route once it gets to the city, but is it way off the beaten trail, or are people passing by?
It's just the next street over.
Okay.
So it's right in the center of town, 2 minute walk from the cathedral where everyone finishes.
And I want to talk to you about that just a second, because I've seen the videos and it looks remarkable. But when you finish your Camino, when you get done with your walk, you go to the cathedral there at Santiago, and you witness, hopefully, a really remarkable ceremony. Tell us a little bit about what happens to pilgrims once they arrive at the cathedral.
Once pilgrims arrive at the cathedral, they all meet, and there's just the excitement on everyone's faces, the cheers, the pictures taken, just all of the smiles and encouragement and hugging one another and seeing people that maybe you haven't seen in a few days or reconnecting with old friends. Everyone kind of lays out in front of the cathedral and gathers together. But once everyone is finished at 12 o'clock noon, they have a pilgrimage mass where people will go in and attend a Spanish service. And every once in a while, if you're lucky, I personally wasn't able to see it, but you would be able to see the Botafumero, which is a giant incense ball that swings back and forth throughout the cathedral.
Yeah, I would encourage everybody to go over to YouTube and take a look at the Cathedral of Santiago de Compostela and look at this wonderful ceremony of the Botafumero. Am I pronouncing it correctly?
Yep, you got it.
And you may be familiar with Catholic or other particularly liturgical services where there is something called a thurible, and the person who swings it is a thurifer, and it's where the incense comes out. And normally they're about the size of, grapefruit or softball. But this one is the size of a VW. It's huge. And the legend is that they would swing this massive
ball of incense.
Yeah, and it's just smoking up a storm over all of the pilgrims because, well, they didn't smell so good, right, after finishing the Camino. We should say that the legend of the Camino is that it was the place where St. James went ages ago, or at least parts of him. Do you know the story behind that?
I know bits and pieces of the story. I know that St. James walked along that pathway, and then at some point, I believe that his boat shipwrecked and his remains were found and brought back to the cathedral, but that's why the emblem of the Camino, aside from the cross, is this image of a shell,
right?
Because maybe there were shells on him or near things that he was found with, but that's at least what I've heard.
Yeah, no, I think you've got it exactly right. So you're there in Spain at the cathedral or nearby, and your responsibilities are to talk with pilgrims as they're finishing up. But you didn't do that without any experience yourself, right? My understanding is that you did walk part of the Camino as well. Talk with me a little bit about how long, what it was like, what you experienced, etc.
I had the incredible opportunity of being able to walk the Camino de Santiago on the French route, the Camino Francés, and I was able to walk about 268 kilometers. I guess that was the total, maybe a little bit less than that because I did take a taxi one or two days. But yeah, it was just such an incredible, incredible experience.
For those of us who don't do kilometers and the metric system, help us with the calculation. How far did you walk?
I was able to walk 130 to 160 miles.
Wow. And over the course of, what, 2 weeks, something like that?
Just under 2 weeks, 13 mm-hmm. days.
Now, you said you had to take a taxi, which I've heard, by the way, happens occasionally because we've had four people at Epiclesis to walk the Camino and or at least parts of it. And sometimes your feet and your ankles, especially you, right, because you kind of went there with a little sore ankle anyway, have to just, for the sake of the body, gosh, get a cab or some other transportation. Is that what happened in your case?
Yeah, I actually had to go to the hospital one of the days.
Oh, I didn't know that.
To get my foot checked out.
Oh,
because
wow.
I ripped off like half of my toe with a bandage, and that was really not fun. And
oh,
so
no.
Had to get that checked out, and also have sustained and currently have a knee injury. And so as much as this was such a beautiful experience, it was also really, really challenging. And I think it was beautiful because of how challenging it
well,
was.
Well, I want to ask you about that, but that should just say, so you're roughly 20 years old, right?
Yeah, I'm 21.
And you're in excellent shape. You're outdoorsy and athletic.
Yeah.
And it was a challenge for you. And gosh, you can just only imagine that for probably the vast majority of folks who do this, they're not going to be in as good a shape as you are. So, I mean, it's a big physical challenge.
Absolutely. I mean, 2 months prior, I was summiting mountains like Cotopaxi and Pichincha in Ecuador. And so I thought I had it in the bag. I
right.
was going to be able to cruise and do completely fine. But I think because maybe I went in with that mindset, I went a little bit too fast
oh.
or relied heavily on my left leg because I wanted to be careful with my ankle still. And
mm-hmm.
so, but it was a beautiful test to be able to rely on the strength of God, because you're sitting there and you're walking and you're hurting, and just being able to think about something else and spend my time in prayer rather than just like, oh man, this is really hard and it's really warm outside and, you know, all of those things.
Right.
But, and also being able to enjoy the camaraderie of talking with pilgrims along
well,
the
I wanted
way.
To ask you about that, because you said that there were some folks who you met along the way in these wonderful God moments, and even folks who helped you. How did that shape you?
It was a great introduction to working at the Pilgrim House, being able to
oh,
walk
yeah.
with people
yeah.
and listen to others
mm-hmm.
and kind of figure out and test out how to talk to people about Jesus and meet people where they're at and listen to their stories. And so one of the days, actually, I was able to talk with this man named Nick, and we were kind of a little bit worried.
Along the way. Okay.
Yeah. We saw him a few days, but the night before in our hostel, all he had for dinner was wine. He came in super late and was kind of acting a bit rowdy. And so we were trying to, I personally had a lot of judgment towards him, and so kind of trying to avoid him, but we all ended up getting up and going around the same time, and I ended up walking 30 kilometers, just over 20 miles, with Nick and my friend Kaylee the entire next day. And so our conversations revolved around philosophy, as he has two PhDs and is currently working on his third, and just is a completely different person from the judgment that I had placed on him.
Wow.
And we were able to have really good conversations about who Jesus is and what Jesus has done and how different groups of people see Jesus and all of those different things. And the entire time that we were having this conversation, he's walking these 30 kilometers with a wine bottle in his hand. And it was just a silly experience, but really rewarding to be able to talk with him, even to take my mind off of all of the aches and pains
sure.
and blisters. So.
You get back to the end point where you will be serving for the next few days and weeks. Do you experience the Mass at the cathedral? And you did get a certificate of completion, right, of the Camino?
Yes. Yeah, I was able to do both those things.
And that's usually a high point for people, I understand.
Yeah, it was a high point, but it was kind of almost a transition period. It was like, okay, I finished this, and I'm ready to move into the next.
And we're going to pivot over here, is sort of the idea.
Yes.
Well, you take up your role with One Collective and what they're doing there at the Pilgrim House. Talk with us a little bit about, how long was that, by the way? Once you finished the Camino, how long were you there at the Pilgrim House?
I was working at the Pilgrim House for just over a month and a half.
Okay, so it's still a pretty good length of time where you settle into the daily rhythm. You're obviously seeing and talking with all kinds of different folks. Talk with us about the daily routine. Talk with us about what you're doing there, actually doing during the day. And then I want to pick your brains a little bit about some of the encounters you had.
It was really hard for me to honestly establish a rhythm, as every single day was different and I was splitting my time between the two different projects of One Collective, the two different ministries of One Collective.
And we're talking about Pilgrim House and Apotheca, which we'll get to in a minute, right? Is that the two that
yes.
you're talking about? Okay.
Yeah, and so I wasn't really able to develop a rhythm, but for the first half of my time there, I was heavily Pilgrim House focused. And so my rhythm would look like wake up around 8, start walking the Camino Frances and walk into work. And then I would spend about 8, 8 and a half, 9 hours working. Welcoming pilgrims was the first thing that we did when they got in. Because sometimes when you get into the cathedral, it seems almost anticlimactic. Wow, I've been walking for 45 days and I'm just seeing this big building. There's a lot of
beautiful
churches around.
Yeah.
So,
another church.
Yeah.
I'm done. So let me get this right. The place where you're staying is not right there, and you have to get up and walk part of the Camino to go to work.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's cool.
Even being able to continue and have those good conversations
yeah.
with pilgrims.
As they're finishing up, right?
Right. Oh, exactly. That's like, here, let me take a picture of you. You're so close. You can do this. Si se puede.
And if you get a minute, come by the Pilgrim House and let us help you out
Absolutely.
A little bit. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Some of the people that you're seeing on the way there in the final stretch, they've got the checkered flag. They're coming down the final bit. Do you see them then show up at the Pilgrim House a little later?
Every once in a while, yeah, I would recognize someone and see them. And we often had pilgrims that would be in Santiago for quite a number of days before their flight. Maybe they finished up the Camino early.
Oh, I see.
Or maybe they were going to go to Finisterre or Muxia, two of the other off routes that go to the ocean. And Finisterre is actually called the end of the world. And so you could go there and see the 00 Camino plaque. But some pilgrims decide to do that and then swing back around. But
how much farther is it over to the ocean?
It's only 90 kilometers, so about 60-ish miles.
Okay. You're there working in the Pilgrim House. Folks are coming in, and the first thing you do is hand them a track about Jesus and say, do you want to hear about the Roman road on how to get saved? Is that what you do?
Not quite. Not quite. Yeah.
Not that we're making fun of that, but the point is that's not the philosophy or the angle that One Collective thinks is the best way to engage people. Do I have that partially right?
Yeah, at least right. The Pilgrim House, that's kind of their motto, is kind of welcoming people in where they're at with no agenda. And whenever we're able to have good conversations with people and people ask, like, hey, why are you here? Why are you interning and volunteering? Absolutely sharing about Jesus and why we're here and the things that we're hoping to do and all of that good stuff.
And there are times to have those more serious conversations about what it means to make Jesus Lord and to bend the knee and the invitation for someone to join in God's story.
Absolutely.
But that's probably not the starting place, right?
Yeah, we wanted people to be able to feel comfortable and feel welcome, to be able to have those deeper conversations, ask questions. It was never hidden, like, never hidden that we were a Christian ministry like that.
Right.
But, like, hey, let's grab a coffee. You want to sit down and talk? And they'll share. And predominantly, probably about 90% of what I did was listen. And so rather than just talking at people or here's what you should do next, it was more listening to their stories.
Can I just interrupt you and say that's one of the many things I admire about you, because your average 21-year-old, and you're not an average 21-year-old, talks entirely too much and thinks that they know most everything. In fact, a lot of adults are that way. But 21 years old, I'm thinking when I was 21, I thought I knew absolutely everything. And the fact that you are coming back from this saying, hey, 90% of what I was doing was listening, is wonderfully mature. And I just want to give you a shout out for that.
Thank you, Pastor Chris. I've worked really hard to, and I'm still trying to navigate how to balance being confident in what the Lord has done, what the Lord has made me to do, but also being humble and coming at everything from a learning approach. So.
I admire that so much about you. I'm going to bet that along the way, you heard some really wonderful, interesting stories. Can you share maybe just one with us?
I was able to have this incredible conversation with my good friend David, who I stay in contact with. He's from Ireland, and he came into the Pilgrim House with his brother. They were hoping to cook a meal, and he had a lot of really heavy things that he was navigating and working through, probably one of the leading reasons why he decided to walk the Camino in the first place, to be able to process those and spend time alone and think through all of the thoughts and all of those things, process the grief. But I was able to sit down and have a conversation with him and then move to a place where it was a little bit more quiet. But we were able to just honestly share, talk about Jesus. He had been avoiding the Christian church for a lot of his life because of just the hurt that he has felt. And so it was just a beautiful experience to be able to talk with him honestly about Jesus and how I say that I'm a follower of Jesus rather than say I'm a Christian, because you say Christian and people can interpret that in so many different ways. But like Jesus, like you can't go wrong with saying Jesus. And so
that's amazing. And I'm going to bet that it had also a transformative effect upon you as well.
Yeah, it was a lot of give and take. I was able to have that conversation and just be able to listen, but also share. And it was a 3-hour conversation. I hadn't even finished my lunch, but it was a 3-hour conversation up until close. And it really just felt like 30 minutes and two friends kind of talking.
Wow.
So.
The Sunday before you shared at Epiclesis, and I think you were still on your way back home, we brought in one of three missionaries we support at Epiclesis named Susan McCrary. She and her husband Larry live in Madrid, Spain. And I hope you'll go back and listen to what she had to say. She talked mostly about seeing, or at least trying very hard to see people as Jesus would see them. She said, go back in your mind to a scripture story, just any scripture story where Jesus encounters somebody, and put yourself in the place of that person. How did Jesus approach you? How did he find you? What did he say? What did he not say? What was the encounter like? And she said that above all is one of the things that motivates us and shapes how we deal with people. It sounds like that's exactly what you did too.
That's what I tried to do, see other people the way that Jesus sees people, and also in that same sense, seeing myself the way that Jesus sees me.
Oh, well
because
said.
I can often be really hard on myself and, oh, I should have done this, and trying to be everything for all people, but that's not possible. That's what Jesus does. That's not what I can do. So
yet another thing that I really appreciate about you, and in that way, you're spiritually mature beyond your years, because so many people, me included, spend a lot of our time, a lot of our lives until we were much older and processed through it, not really liking ourselves very much and not being kind to ourselves that Jesus would be. Having the same mind about us that Jesus has about us. That's a big deal to process, and so good on you. There was another aspect of the ministry that you had there called Apotheca, and in fact, you brought some goodies back to our church to share with folks. Tell us a little bit about, before we leave, this other ministry that One Collective has spun off there at Santiago.
although I really enjoyed my time with the Pilgrim House, I found my work with Apotheca was the most rewarding.
And by the way, kind of really resonating, dovetailing with some of the things you're studying and the direction you think you want to take in life, right? Business, a nonprofit, et cetera?
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah, tell us about it.
That was completely formational because I was able to be mentored by the head catalyst there, kind of the head leadership there in Spain. And it was an incredibly unique experience being able to see how nonprofits function and understanding better social economy and kind of the different things that I'm hoping to be able to pursue in my life.
So you brought back soap. And not just any soap. Man, these things look as good as they smell. Why soap? What in the world does Apotheca have to do with soap?
Apotheca uses the soap that they create. They've been taking the last 2 years to perfect building this soap, but they are able to take the soap and, through making the soap, provide a job for a woman who has suffered domestic abuse. But also, in the fall, with all of the profit that they've been able to raise from selling these soaps, they are going to create a support group for women in the Santiago area.
Wow.
For those survivors of domestic abuse to be able to talk and share their stories and seek help and relate with other women in that way. And
so teaching folks the skill of making these artisan soaps and then using that to support ministry for victims of abuse. Do I have it right?
Being able to use the soap kind of therapeutically to be able to create that, but also creating employment opportunities for women is.
And then using resources to further the ministry to folks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing I notice about tourist places, and that's probably just a terrible way to describe that, but places where folks congregate from all over the world and they're coming there for some purpose, either vacation or some spiritual event, you know, same can be said of Hawaii or, you know, wherever folks from around the world are gathering, there's always local folks. And they go almost unseen. Hawaii reminds me of that in some ways. And I've only been once. You lived in Hawaii. But I think you know what I mean, right?
Absolutely.
People coming from all over the world. And you forget that there are people who live there. And sometimes their lives aren't as glamorous and wonderful and awesome as what the tourist experience is.
That is 100% true. Yeah. There's a lot of people in Santiago who kind of fall under the radar. And although there's a lot of areas where God is working in Santiago, there's also a large population of people who are oppressed in Santiago, either lifelong pilgrims or people who are struggling. There's a university in the area and students are unable to rent apartments because tourism has made it so profitable to have Airbnbs, VRBOs, all of those things. And so students are unable to find housing.
Right.
And there's a lot of lower income people and then higher income people, but there really is no middle class.
Right. Would you like to go back?
I would love to go back.
You think you will at some point?
The catalyst who I was working under and who was mentoring me and pouring more into me than I would ever be able to give back. Uh-huh. But he really encouraged me to pursue this kind of holistic community development work in the future or some sort of work in nonprofit. And I could absolutely see myself going back.
Yeah, or doing something very similar.
Or doing something very similar.
You're off to school next week. How can we be praying for you, Aubrey? That you get through it, right?
Absolutely. I would love prayer for, I anticipate that in the 9 months that I've been gone, a lot of things have changed.
Yeah.
And so for me to be able to transition back well and connect with the folks who have done such a good job of keeping in contact with me.
Yeah, going from world traveler, mission hero, back to, quote, plain old student. That's going to be tough, I'll bet. But also wonderful to reestablish friendships and so on. Well, I don't say it enough, but I'm going to again, in front of God and everybody, I so admire you. I think, by the way, you did a wonderful job in sharing with the church. You're wise and mature beyond your years, and I'm just grateful to God that he thought so much of me that he made our paths cross. Bless you. I love you, and thanks so much for being a part of this program today.
Thank you so much, Pastor Chris. It's been so beautiful the way that Epiclesis Church community has rallied around me and just been so encouraging, yourself included, and making me feel loved, but more special, even like known by the church community.
We do love you. Folks, until we gather again for another episode of Ancient Future Faith, I want you to be thinking about this. Surely the road to our evangelical Christian future does run through our ancient Christian past. Until next time, the Lord be with you.